Podcast, what's good? Want to make sure you're tuning into our hit show, which, you know, as COVID evolves, is not necessarily now daily, but multiple times a week. Please follow me at Twitter. Actually, in general, before I go into this promo with Tea with Gary Vee, which is the promo, I need you to watch Tea with Gary Vee. It is some of, I would argue, you know how I like to say my mom thinks it's the best? I think it might be the best content I've ever done. So please tune in. But also, please make sure you're following me on Twitter. If like, if you've dropped Twitter, like if you add your notifications to my account on Twitter so you get push notified, like Twitter is, besides my 212-931-5731, Twitter is absolutely the pulse of my universe. And if you're not following me there, you're missing out on a lot of stuff. Anyway, Tea with Gary Vee, multiple times a week, usually 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern time. Big shout out to the West Coast. See a lot of you in the 6 a.m. fam. Just emotionally, strategically, the best content I've ever put out, in my opinion. Tea with Gary Vee. And please go to YouTube and catch up on prior episodes. Just type in Tea with Gary Vee. Tea as in not like Mr. Tea. Tea as in like the stuff that I drink in the mornings because I'm from Russian descent. Tea with Gary Vee. Check it out.
This is the Gary Vee Audio Experience.
My life was kind of rough. I had an awful battle. The doctor set my parents down and said my life was fragile. Perspective is the game. I guarantee the name. Just put your head down, do the work, and everything will change. Sipping tea, helping feels. Yeah, that's what I wanted. Being patient, hella tricky if I'm being honest.
Tea with Gary Vee, with some positivity.
What's good? What's good? What's good? I missed all of you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Let's see some of the people in the chat. This is so fun. God, I missed all of you. I hope everybody's super well. Good morning, Max. What's good? Good to see you, Rudy Branch, Lily P, S. Soto. Great to see you. Great to see everybody. Alex, great to see you. Pokemon Radar, what's good? Hey, Sav, great to see you. Thank you for joining. Big shout out to everybody on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Dustin, how are you this morning?
Good. Just kind of forgot how to do things.
Yeah, a little rusty, right?
Yeah.
A little rusty too. Great to see you though, and hope you've been well. You make some money on some sports cards or Pokemon?
No money, just more inventory.
Just buying.
Yeah.
That's good.
Interesting ones.
Ooh, nice little work. So you're getting deep, you're getting educated?
Trying. I mean, these two, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, you're gambling.
Yeah, a little bit of a gamble.
But the yellow cheeks, the red cheeks, you got any of that action?
Yeah, I got a red cheeks on the way. It's coming from Canada though, so it's not gonna be here for a while. But
a red yellow cheeks nine or
yeah, nine. I can't afford it.
Tens of gun things. Yeah, I get it. Anyway, great to see you. Let's get into the show.
Cool.
Yo.
Yo, Bill.
What's going on, Gary?
Things are good, man. What a background, bro.
Yeah, I'm over in Capri, Italy. I flew into Croatia, and then once you're in Croatia for 2 weeks, they kind of accept you in other places. So
is that the rule?
Yeah, that's the rule over here. So you know, I'm scrawling, clapping, begging anything to travel. You know, I love travel. So,
Bill, I really wanted you on the show. Everybody, I really wanted Bill on the show because I think his topic of his new book is super fascinating. I think it has a lot to do with happiness. Bill, why don't you take the platform for a quick second and make sure everybody follow Bill. Why don't you give 2 seconds of context of your career and then a little bit about your book?
Okay, so context of my career. I started off as assistant peon on the New York Mercantile Exchange. That means I snuck sandwiches on the floor for traders. Meanwhile, I was learning everything I could, became like a journeyman, got better and better, became basically made sure I was like irreplaceable. Got an opportunity to trade at a desk in Houston, Texas, worked at a hedge fund, started my own hedge fund, do investments, made movies, you know, became a rich guy, did what I thought rich guys things should do. And now I'm have daughters, family, ex-wife, engaged, kids, dog, cat, you name it. I got it. You know, just trying to find balance in my life and live my life and enjoy life. And I wanted to share some of the things that I've observed that I think people can get fulfillment from.
So what's the name of the book and what kind of what was the blueprint?
The book is called Die with Zero.
Oh, you've got it on you. I'm impressed, bro. Boom. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I come correct. It's called Die with Zero. The book is it's a It's about net fulfillment over net worth. And really, it's a methodology. The message is a methodology for everyone to look at their life from now to the grave, right? And use all their resources at the right time to get the maximum they can out of life.
So from, no matter from a happiness ROI versus how much is sitting in the bank account, from a fulfilled, like, how do you define it? Like, am I supposed to be happy? Am I supposed to be like enriched? Like, what's the perspective?
So I believe that the summation of your experiences and the experiences you choose to have and when are correlated with your happiness and your fulfillment, right? So I solve for those experiences and making sure that, you know, you go to work, right? Part of it is you love what you do. I can tell that you love what you do, getting your message out, right? But part of it is to pay the bills for survival. We need to survive. Yep. And then the rest of it is for experiences that we want to have. And a lot of times people become successful, they go on autopilot, right? And they're just like success, piling in the money, and they're forgetting, they're going through life like they're driving home, right? And you just all of a sudden home. You don't remember how you turned, you took or anything. You're just home.
And boom, you're 74. You've got some dollars in your bank account, but did you love, was it great? Is really the question.
Correct. And I want people to have the biggest ride they can have and the experiences they choose. So I want them to get off autopilot. I want them to recognize that their body deteriorates, their mental facilities deteriorate, and certain experiences are meant for certain times in their life. And that
So is that similar to, you know, a lot of people get mad at me when I talk about high risk behavior in your 20s because it's just more practical to, you know, go for the three or four, you know, so many kids at 22 are like, fuck, I have to get real now. It's over. And I've really struggled with that because I'm like, no, this is exactly the time you do whatever you really think you want to do because the regret is devastating. And the practicality of doing it now while you've got four bozo roommates versus versus a husband and two children or a wife and three children or responsibilities. You know, I've always been fascinated of 22 to 30 years old. I think people completely misplay it. I've really focused on that range. It seems like you're focusing on a very similar vibe in the macro.
Yeah, I'm taking from that 22 to 30 and I'm taking it all the way to the grave. And I 100% agree with you on taking, I always tell people, think of the most risk you can possibly take in that time frame and then add a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I you know, my risk was, and Bill, it takes all shapes and sizes. My risk was I knew in my brain and my chemicals that I was a beast, but I also desperately wanted to fucking come through for my parents because I loved them so much. I was so grateful. You know, it was so entrenched in me, like where they grew up. Both of them lost a parent at a young age. You know, they grew up in Russia and I knew I had it. And so for me, the high risk was build a humongous company for my dad from 22 to 32 and have nothing and start over. That's risky. Other people's version is they've always wanted to be a rapper and they just need to go to the south side of Atlanta and go for it instead of getting a job at Goldman Sachs or, like, you know, going to grad school.
Listen, I people, even when they fail in those ventures, they are enriched. They learn from that experience and they have so much more to add in their relationships and future professional endeavors, et cetera.
Bill, what about for the people that are not destined to be rich, but also want to be enriched and have this? Like, so talk to me real quick for the 98% that are going to make 70 to, you know, 48 to 130,000 a year, you know, from a resource standpoint, what can they get out of this hypothesis? Because obviously they're going to have different, like, you know, your background right now is something people are only going to see in their life, not live, because they're not going to have that financial capacities potentially. How should they be thinking about it?
Well, let me work backwards on that. Please. One thing I say to people, everywhere I go, every exotic place I go, there's somebody doing it for 1/1000th the price.
Correct.
They got their backpack, they're couch surfing, they find a way, and they're having a very rich experience too. They're not having this exact same one I'm having.
And by the way, I apologize. I really apologize, but you just fired me up because I'm just thinking here. I'm like, you know, I'd rather go to some fancy place. I'm so dirt that I'm like, yeah, like I'd rather go somewhere and prove to myself that I can fucking sell fruit. But then if I like surfing, I don't like surfing, but like, I'm like, oh, I want to surf here. Well, I'm just going to go and fucking bleed and work some shit job so I can surf in the mornings. To your point, I may not roll up in a fucking yacht and surf, but I'm still gonna surf.
Gary, one of the most liberating things I did was panhandle on the street as an experiment. I you know, it was humbling, but it also freed me. It was like, I can make it.
When did you do that?
I did it about 5 years ago in Vegas. It was about five years ago in Vegas, maybe six in Vegas. And it was scary. It was humbling. You know, I eventually would give the money back to other people and say, hey, just help somebody else down the road, because I didn't want to be taking money.
You were testing the game. Yes, yeah, so it's what I do with garage sailing. Like, I go in garage sale, but then, like, whatever profits are made, I'm trying to show everybody how to do it, but then I donate the profits. I get it.
Yeah, and so for the people, you know, life, still, you have resources and you still have choices, and you want to, and when you have limited resources, you want to allocate them properly throughout your life. You don't want to be delaying gratification till you're 75 on certain experiences, when either you won't enjoy them as much or you won't even want to do them, right? Like, I don't let, you know, I'm not, you know, you wake me up to go to a club and glow stick and I'm gonna be like, I'm going to sleep. You know, when I was 22, all yeah. you have to say is, hey, there's going to be girls. I'm up. I'll be there in 5 minutes, right? You know, and or you just can't do it, right? You just can't, like, you can't climb Machu Picchu at 75. You don't have the watts per kilogram of energy you need to get up those steps, right? And so we don't want to be making mistakes in allocating when we have these experiences. And so I think people will get a lot of value out of making sure that they time bucket their experiences and not have a bucket list. That means, hey, I don't put things to go climb Mount Everest. I don't want to climb Mount Everest, even though David Goggins is trying to get me to climb Mount Everest. After I have kids, you can't go spend 2 months, you know, when you have toddlers on the side of Mount Everest getting acclimated. And so when you look and you get off autopilot and you think about the totality of your life, why you're saving, right? You're saving for these experiences. So we want to make sure we put these experiences in the right time frame. If you were in heaven and God said, hey, here's your resources and you can have all these experiences, but here's the trick. You got to get the order right. A lot of people are on autopilot, not getting the order right, not you know, not doing the things in their 20s when they should be in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And when you take a step back and think about the totality of your life and you order these things right, you're going to get more fulfillment. You're going to get a better ride relative to, you know, you just being on autopilot and not getting this message in the book. And you don't even have to buy the book. You just need to get the message. And I think a lot of the messages overlaps with what you optimize for. You optimize a lot in people in their business or in their marketing, and you're the master at that. And this is kind of like a high level total life optimization.
You know, it's funny. I really love that, because I really, you know, optimize for happiness too. I mean, you and I had a quick chat about sports cards. Like,
yeah.
I want to be happy a lot of, like, and so if I am getting, if I'm talking about garage selling and flipping, if I'm talking about sports cards, or if I'm talking about wrestling or the Jets, a lot of people come at me in high, you know, and you run in these high circles as well, of like, hey man, you could be like the guy. Why do you talk about all this dumb shit? Like, you could be floating in rarefied air. What are you doing with all this stuff? And I'm like, I'm being happy. And that, in an essence, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's like getting what you want. Like, I don't tell people what to do. I just give them a methodology to get what they want, you know, and then they make the choices.
Framework. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so. What's
the biggest thing you've learned? A lot of people watching right now are inevitably on a track to eventually write a book, or want to write a book, self-publish, or go with a publisher. Just for fun, while I've got you, before I move on, biggest thing you've learned, biggest insight you've learned from the book process, and tell everybody. I mean, obviously, it's available on Amazon. Is it out? What's the date it's coming out? What's the punchline?
It's out. The book is out there. It's everywhere: Barnes & Nobles, Amazon. You know.
Name it.
Independent bookstores, if they're open, you can get it, right?
And what's the biggest thing you've learned?
I think the biggest thing I learned is to start with the outline. You know, I think, and like, people are like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. Once you start and you go through the process of like, hey, I'm going to outline this book. This is what it's going to be. I'm going to reach out to people to help me. If you know, you need help. If you're here for your first time, you need help, reach out for expertise. But the biggest thing I learned is I've been talking smack about this philosophy and this methodology for like 10 years. I'm going to write a book. Finally, my doctor was like, and then it was going to be an app. I was going to make an app to like teach people to do it. And finally, my doctor's like, no, you got to write a fucking book. I've never heard anything like this. And it was a straw that broke the camel's back, because I was procrastinating. So the biggest thing is to start and then reach out for help. He was like, hey, I know this person that's an agent, or this person that does writing. They'll help you with the outline, etc. Start, fucking start, fucking start. Don't be like me, who procrastinated, you know?
In that spot, but yeah, executing others.
Yeah, you know, executing at others.
You look handsome. The background looks amazing. I hope you're well. And I hope everybody picks the book up. Pull it on the screen one more time so people visualize it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Are you literal with it? Is the punchline of the book like, hey, don't have money in your bank account when you die? Leave a little something for your kids? Like, what's the punchline?
Well, it's definitely, listen, the kids are extremely important. And I'm about maximizing my kids' lives too. And the time you want to give your money to your kids is not when you die. Not a 60-year-old, right? They're 28, 30. That's when that's going to have the maximum impact on your life if you're going to leave something to them. There's some people like, I'm not giving my kids anything. But like for those that are, if we want to maximize the impact. So it's about deliberate living and deliberate planning all the way. And yes, it's impossible to get to zero. And I give you all kinds of methodologies to not waste your life working for money that you're never going to spend. But it is about using all your resources while you're here on planet Earth to convert them into the experiences you want. So we want to get to zero so we have zero regrets. Die with zero regrets.
I love it. Have a great day, Bill. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Before we go to our next guest, just want to give an enormous send of love and compassion to all our brothers and sisters in Beirut and Lebanon. Just horrific, horrific visuals yesterday. And just my hearts and prayers go out to everybody and anybody who's got friends or family in that beautiful city. Let's keep it moving. Alex.
Gary.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you. What's
going on? Well. Hey, man. I can't believe I'm not on call with you right now.
I'm glad to have you on.
Yeah. I've been following you for a while now, you know, or we met in 2018 in Miami, right? And you had inspired me as one of the few real estate agents at the time with a D-Rock, following me around, documenting, editing, producing. And you told me, you said, Alex, you just wait and see. In a couple of years, you're going to have a whole team behind you. And so I really took it to heart. And, fast forward now, we're in 2020, in the middle of a pandemic. And I took my real estate business. I joined a partner with a venture-backed real estate brokerage called Side here in Silicon Valley. And, just like you said now, my business is supported by a team of people and a team of amazing people. So first off, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. What can I answer for you?
So Side's model is it basically empowers top producing agents by taking their best interest at heart. And so they take successful brands centered around the agent rather than the brokerage. And these big box brokerages have failed to do this for a very long time.
I got it.
Yeah. And so, with you, you're the perfect David and Goliath story, right? Wine, you disrupted from the outside. Same thing with VaynerMedia. And so my question to you is, like, as the Gary V of real estate for my company, what are some tips and strategies that have helped you disrupt the traditional markets, and why is it so important to have an outsider perspective to an industry like real estate when it's long overdue for evolution and change?
I think the thing that's always helped me is that I have a couple things going for me. One is patience. You're not going to disrupt anything. I mean, VaynerMedia is in year 11. I've really run it for 9 years. First 2 years were more AJ. I was still doing the wine stuff and writing Crush It. So you got to take the long game. Side is not going to, disrupt all these big names, Sotheby's, Remax, Keller. Like, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It takes a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades. So first, I've always had the long game in mind. That's one. Two, the weirdest thing about me that me and my team or my best friends or family always laugh about is the Gary V thing has so become a thing that there's a lot of people that don't realize who Gary Vaynerchuk is, right? Like the person that is actually, I haven't done tea with Gary V and, I've done it once in every 2 weeks lately because I'm operating, nobody's watching me when I'm on the phone right now at 8:30 in the morning, 8 to 8:30 in the morning with, major executives in Dubai, or from 8:30 to 9 when I'm having a finance meeting and making decisions on, restructuring our debt. And, they don't see the operator. So I think the other thing that has made me disrupt the wine and marketing industry is actual operational talent, like genuinely being a businessman, not playing one on Instagram, right? And so I think, there's a, And it's really worked for me in a lot of ways. Like, you know, I feel like people continue to underrate me. You know, I can't stop talking about sports cards right now. I don't know if you ever grew up collecting those, Alex, but you need to get re-educated. 2 years ago, I tell every one of my friends, and I'm talking like my brother and Tyler and Lou and Ryan Harwood from Gallery Media Group and David Levy, who I've done business with, and like, and Sam Ben Ruby, people I've made money for in investing in companies. And I told all of them to get into sports cards, and nobody did. They dabbled, but nobody went hard. And it's because I'm actually still underrated. You know, like there's the part that has allowed me to disrupt is actual skill. Like, and then being really, the next part I would say is being a culturally led CEO. You know, to disrupt, you need continuity. Mm-hmm. You need the same people around you. You can't spend all your time retraining. And I think that one of the things that's really worked for me is I built families. I've built family at VaynerMedia and at Wine Library, people that are there for 8, 12, 15 years. And that matters. So having compassion and empathy and being a true leader. So, you know, I think, and then I think finally, and by far the most important reason I've won is I'm 100% consumer centric. You know, what you plan on disrupting is like, hey, Karen, you're a great agent here in Dallas. You're paying way too much tax to these logos. You should be making more of the money because you're the winner. You know, listen, it's run through my mind in the last 2, 3 years, 4 years of like, oh, if I launch Vayner, you know, real estate and I take less commission and I build a machine to build up everyone's personal brand, I will win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that whoever brings the most value, VaynerMedia is doing a lot more for Kraft and Pepsi and GE and Chase and Diageo and on and on and on than what our competitors are for the same amount of money. It's not super complicated. Wine Library sold wine at a better price for customers and had better customer service. And so, you know, I think it's that. And then I think, and then when you layer the fact that I've built a personal brand and bring a lot of awareness to the things I do, and even the way I've built the personal brand, in a lot of ways, I myself undermine my own quality because of the hyperbole, the high energy. A lot of people aren't sure if I'm even real or not. And so, you know, I think those are the kind of the ingredients when you ask that question that come to mind.
Awesome. So you said personal brand. And so, I mean, you always talk about attention and eyeballs, yes. Right? And knowing that in the future. And I remember you talked about how, like, in the real estate industry, because so much money involved and such a low barrier to entry, that it just attracts a lot of C players, right? And so, as a brokerage of the future, we want to develop, in, you know, focus on developing the A players. And so, what are some opportunities that you might see in for this to grow and change and evolve as we build up leaders, particularly in this like COVID times with marketing and branding and just kind of what advice do you have there?
My advice is actually to stay the course, but to cut out non-potential A winners along the way so that you hold up that equity. Hmm. You know, the biggest vulnerability you have if you actually mean building the A leaders is not taking the money from the obvious C and D players.
Right. Yeah.
That's the actual answer.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's the actual truth. And that's hard for a business that, you know, has the ability to take money from B and C players.
Right.
So I think that's a discipline thing on your end.
Hmm. Awesome.
Alex, I'm rooting for you, brother. It's good to see you again.
Hey, Gary, good to see you too. Thanks so much for the time.
You're welcome.
Peace.
Dustin, is LinkedIn not live? I don't see LinkedIn comments.
I saw a couple before, but let me check.
Okay. Big shout out to everybody. Big shout out to everybody who's in the comments. Who's in the share squad? Let's take this URL and share it. We're firing on all cylinders this morning. I love it. Share. Oh, nice share squad, Dustin. Let's move on to the next guest while you're trying to figure out LinkedIn. Adam.
Good morning, Adam, Gary.
I didn't know they were going to have you on this. That's what's good, man. How are you?
I think we're supposed to do last week, which actually this week worked out perfect.
I'm happy, man.
Thanks for having
me. Adam, before we even get to your question, tell everybody about your remarkable coffee that we love so much.
Well, yeah, so thanks for having me on. I really appreciate everything you and your team have done for us. You guys have provided so much guidance.
Thank you.
And once you guys return to the office in the city, we look forward to providing you guys with our awesome coffee. So I started Aficionado 2007. My career, first off, I've always been an entrepreneur or self-starter. My mother taught me at a very young age. I remember following my brother's footsteps as well, you know, doing things that weren't so kosher, like selling fireworks and fake Rolex watches in high school and whatnot. Yep. But, you know, I believe it's something that you're born with. And
adolescence. So,
absolutely. So started in finance, left my career in 2007, moved home with my mother and started roasting coffee on her barbecue.
Love you for that. Before you go anywhere, how did you have the humility? You know, I'm listening to you, right? So you're this hustler kid. Cliche. You're one of the, you know, some people go right into building their business. A lot of other people are so in the thought, they don't even realize yet that they love the game more than money, but they think they love money, so they go into finance. You realize, oh, this is just not fun compared to like doing some shit. How did you have the humility to move back in with your mom? Was it forced because you just had no money because you were spending it on dumb shit? Or were you like, I need a reset?
Well, I think for me, you know, let me back up. I come from a well-off family. My mom's always worked really hard, provided for us. I lost my father when I was 18. And for me, the hardest thing was coming out of college, all of my buddies working in finance, seeing them kill it. And then, you know, we started to see some things with our own company in 2007, where the financial market started to collapse. So I'm like, fuck it. If I'm going to take a risk, do it now. And yeah, it was hard. You know, it was not easy to put my head at rest on some nights, you know, you think that people think that you're crazy or like maybe you're a loser because you're not following what your path is supposed to be.
Yep.
But for me, I always, when I worked in finance, I didn't like the status quo. Like, you know, you make money, you buy a Rolex, you buy a Range Rover, you party out in the Hamptons. And for me, I always liked doing what everybody else wasn't doing. So I wanted this off the beaten path life. And that's what I pursued. And I found happiness with it. And then, you know, as time goes on, my brother's very successful. We have very different mythologies when it comes to business. He's very dedicated to business models. And for me, I'm more
creative.
And I'm like, you know what? You shovel shit good. And if you do it well enough, you're going to be successful.
Yeah,
and I think
it's
something when you're creative, if you keep the juices flowing, you're going to look back on your business model that you created 2 months ago and you're going to crumble it up and be like, I'm already 5 miles down the road. So we are kind of a disruptor in the coffee industry. We started our focus. Yeah, we started at the farmers markets. We rapidly went into wholesale. So our brand isn't really well known being 10 years, 12 years into this because we focused on business to business. So we sell to restaurants, institutions like yourself. And now we're at the point where we want to make the turn and start going to direct to consumer. And for us,
and did that speed up because of COVID? Were you one of the businesses, when I hear that model, I'm like, oh fuck, he must have been really affected by COVID.
Well, you know, I think the thing is, you know, starting really early on, and I, you know, not to talk too much about my past of like losing my father at 18, but I thought the most difficult challenges in my life have pushed me over the edge to take risk. And I think that rather than look at the negatives in life, you should turn them into positives.
Right, so because you dealt with something way fucking harder and losing your dad at that kind of age, the thought of COVID, even though it fucked up the business in the short term, you're like, fuck this, I'm gonna turn this, this is gonna force me to go ham on DDC.
Yep, yeah, so like I like to look at it from like a 50-50 split. You keep the 50% that's like doubting you, and then you keep 50% of your family in your backcourt that's like, they got your back. And so with me, that 50% is, yeah, my family, my friends, and my team. My team has been like the most important thing over the past 10 years. We, unlike any other coffee roaster, we don't poach people from within industry. I went out and found creatives. I have one of our head of research and development is one of our first chefs, Peter Turso. He's super talented. And I'm like, fuck, if this guy can do this with food, you know what he can do with coffee. And not only coffee, we started very early on. I know you're into wine. I've shopped at your family store many years, probably spent too much money there.
Thank you.
You know, I have a passion for wine. And what I learned really early on is that the coffee industry is like 50 years behind the wine curve. So I started, you know, last year I took my mom down to Argentina with a bunch of coffee farmers. We hung out with agronomists and we learned that we can apply all these applications from wine to coffee to get different flavor profiles and do all these different things, have better production. And so we basically looked at the company as like an onion and peeled back every single layer and said, what is everybody else doing? Let's do the complete opposite and do it thoroughly. And rather than just talk about it, we started filming all of our farm tours. I go down to each one of our origins annually, besides this year, unfortunately. And we tell the story. So there's, you know, there's no bullshit. And so we've become like this disruptor. One of our biggest clients in New York, Major Food Group, you know, they call themselves the disruptors of the food industry. And because they do things different and they don't give a fuck what else everybody else is doing. And so it's taught me so much. And yesterday, actually, Peter Terso, my head of research development, said, you know, we've kind of become this company where at the farm level, you can give a man a fish, he can feed himself for a day, the old Italian proverb. You teach him how to fish and he'll have fish for a lifetime. And that's kind of the philosophy we always followed, in addition to, you know, a company that I love, Tesla, where Elon Musk is like, you know, Wall Street gave him shit for not hiring people from Ford and Chevy that, you know, had years of understanding of batteries and stuff. He's like, no, fuck
the
that.
The first 40 people I hired at VaynerMedia had 0 days of agency experience. Zero.
It's amazing.
40. Zero. Because I knew I wanted to disrupt, and you can't disrupt when you bring in old thinking. And I knew that old thinking would rub off on me, even at my passionate like me. It's still osmosis. It's still subconscious bias.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that I'll tell you just really the thing that sets us apart as a coffee roaster is at the farm level. I mean, we do all these great things back in New Jersey at our facility. Peter's great. Our roasting team is amazing. But what really sets us apart is on the farms. You know, people are like, oh, I paid an extra $2 to the farmer. You know, we work with native Quechuas in Peru. They don't have an understanding of what is good and healthy for them. So anybody that says they're going to go down to a farm and get these, win these people over, doing business with them from year to year, 1 year at a time, is bullshit. You need to put in 5-10 years. You need to build a relationship.
I get it.
And so like when you look at our videos over the years, every year we go down there, the smile gets bigger and bigger because
it becomes family. It becomes real. You're not transacting. You're building relationships. You're not coming for 1 year when they have oversupply to kind of get the best deal you can. They know that you're actually there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Adam, what's your question?
So it's two part.
Go ahead.
All right, so we're making this transition right during COVID, right? We're direct to consumer. It's not my wheelhouse. A little nervous about it. My team, John Michael, my cousin, who you've also talked to, he got us set up on Amazon. So we're doing Amazon, we're doing e-commerce. Would you recommend, because we are still growing very rapidly in our wholesale, we don't have a ton of resources because we're have grown organically since day one. Would you recommend us putting our resources into like divvying it up between Amazon and advertisements through Instagram, or should we pick one and run with it?
To drive sales on Amazon?
Correct.
Split. It's that 50-50 game. Yeah, because you don't want to become too one-dimensional on just winning on Amazon within Amazon, because it's going to get more competitive. And if you can drive down from other areas, it gives you leverage to not be stuck in that garden wall of just Amazon.
Sure. And then one last thing. So being the king of content, we have a ton of content. It's kind of all over the place because we have content from the farm, we have content from roasting, we have content from our wholesale, direct to consumer, and our Instagram, we just started focusing on it in the past year. It's kind of all over the place, but it's
like.
A story.
That
is
I like.
That okay?
That's more than okay. I think the biggest issue for most people is they're too romantic about this ideological cohesiveness on their social. Awesome. I mean, go look at my social. I might be the most all over the place. It might be a cartoon. It might be a long video. Then it's a picture. That's a quote. I think yesterday I put a picture of me shirtless in eighth grade. Like, you know, it's like, it's completely all over the place because it's the truth of the story. I'm not trying to build a fucking art project. I'm trying to fucking communicate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate it, Gary.
Adam, I'm wishing everybody follow. Everybody follow. We'll talk to you soon.
Aficionado. Take care, Gary.
Take care, brother. Bye-bye. Later, man. All right, let's keep it going.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thank you so much for having me. This is such a big manifestation. Thank you.
You're welcome. Where are you from?
I am in Niagara, just outside of Toronto in Canada.
Awesome. What's cooking?
So my question is a little bit specific, so I was hoping I can give some context for you. I'll try to keep it short. So for me, growing up, money was very, very hard. I lost 3 homes from 10 to 18. I had to get 2 to 3 jobs at 15 to like continuously help out. And it was a lot of like failure and struggle. And I had to grow up quickly. Fast forward a bit, I struggled with mental health and was in a lot of dark places. And up until 3 years ago, it was really, really hard. And for me, like, I'm normally such a positive and bubbly and energetic person. And anyone will tell you, like, I'm extremely passionate. So it took me a while to get out of that. But then I found you and I stuck my head down and started working on like what I really, really want and what I want from life and happiness and work and everything. And I became like the young, tall, blonde girl that was like always working. She was at hotels, restaurants, bars, and I became a manager really quickly because I love to lead. I love to do what I'm passionate about and share that with people. And I developed this love for the hospitality and events industry. So went to college for it. And that's where everything got a lot more stable for me. I still worked 3 jobs because experience was value. And I found out that I truly loved what I do and I kept wanting more. I wanted to do big things. So I got involved as much as I could. Fast forward a couple more years, I got a full-time job managing at a large event venue and it provided me a ton of opportunities. So I started a side hustle. So I ended up managing social media and marketing for hospitality and event professionals. And it really, like in 1 year, it took off so quickly. So I joined teams with 2 of my bigger clients in events and wine, like you. And now I find myself like wanting to grow my personal brand on Instagram because everything's been going so well. I want to share my experiences for other people in the industry. And as well as I also like, I always have a million projects on the go. I ended up becoming a manager with the Wine Expert. And then also now I'm teaming up with the other client and we're actually becoming business partners to start our own luxury event planning service. And I truly love it all. Like it all makes me so happy and I love what I do. But my question is, I have all this motivation and I love to work. Like I work day in, day out. And I wanted to ask, how do I find balance when I have so many passions that I want to make all of them big?
Patience.
Okay.
You know, when you're talking, I'm like, oh, this is the blonde woman version of me, right? Like I also had all those things that I wanted to do. But what I did, like what you did, which I admire so much, was first I created a stability.
Mm-hmm.
And then at, you know, 34, I started Vayner and the way I looked at it was to build a platform.
Okay.
And now I'm 44 and things like Empathy Wines can happen. You know, other things will happen over the next decade. And so I think the biggest issue you probably have is what almost everybody has, which is when you have ambition, it's awfully hard to also have patience.
Yeah, that's how I feel. It's like, I want to do all these things and I love them.
I feel like for whatever reason, luck of the draw with DNA, circumstance, maybe seeing my parents, you know, just work forever and event, you know, like, I don't know what, but I was gifted with extreme patience and extreme ambition. And I think that I've come to realize, especially in my early 40s now, that that is not as common as I would think, because I had it. And I think that what's hurting you is your own judgment on yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
And that comes from lack of patience. Like, give it time. Mm-hmm. You're a young woman. You really are. Give it time. Give it time for these things to manifest. And also understand that one of those 3 things may fail.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I try to take, like you say, like failures is better than winning sometimes because you learn so much from it.
100%. And as long as you give the right intent and did it the right way and went about it the right way, then you're in a really good spot. It's just, you know, patience is hard because it's important.
Yeah, I definitely feel that.
People are like, Gary, patience is hard. I'm like, no shit, because it's the fucking core ingredient to success for most people.
Yeah, and I feel like everything for me was like hard growing up, and now like in my 20s, like it just kind of started going positively. So I'm like, go, 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 go all the time. Because I'm like,
because hardship in youth a lot of times is a secret to success.
Okay.
Like, yeah. You're such a go-getter because you had such adversity to stability. You've created stability so quickly because it's what you yearned for because you didn't have it. Most people actually have it as a child. Some have too much of it, which actually makes them the reverse of you, which is entitled and soft.
Yeah, definitely. And I have like all these experiences and these stories, and I find myself being able to like motivate other people, and I want to focus on doing that, and I want to focus on making my businesses matter.
Me too. And I've been doing it. And I've been doing it every day since 2006.
Yes, I just need to be patient. I feel myself feeling like rushed all the time.
Why?
That's the question, I guess.
Why? To whom? You know, whose affirmation are you looking for?
Right.
Who are you looking to say that you did it?
Yeah, definitely. I guess myself, like I genuinely am so happy with what I'm doing. I just have to be more patient with it.
Yeah, and take a breath and be like fucking grateful.
Yeah.
100%. Like here we are, right? Like look how quickly you've been able to, you know, sometimes people with tough childhoods don't really get to that place until their 40s or 50s, which is still remarkable off of that starting point. You've been able to do it so quickly. You were gifted with talent and you were trained and circumstanced into hard work. And here we are.
Yeah, definitely. And I know like my two businesses with my wine client and my event company, like I know it can work. Like I have it in my head and it's
just put your head down for a decade and make them work.
Yeah.
And then when you wake up in 6 years and you want more personal life stuff, do that too. And then in 9 years when you want to, after that in 15 years, when you want to get into something altogether new, do that.
Yeah.
No rules.
Okay. I love it. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. See you.
Bye.
Gary Vaynerchuk, what is good? Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. How are you?
I'm well, I'm blessed, I'm alive. I mean, you know, can't complain.
What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Mahogany Navra. I am from Atlanta. I shot my shot on Twitter and I thank you so much for replying. That was awesome. Yeah, I like ugly cried for like 20 minutes that morning.
Nothing's more fun than me reading my Twitter and just randomly saying, yes, you can be on the show or you want to meet me one day. Well, here we are. So. Maganina, such a pleasure. What can I answer for you?
All right, so just I'm gonna give you some, you know, backstory. Just same as you, immigrant parents, upbringing. You know, came from up here from Mexico. Ooh, repping my Mexico shirt today. And they were just coming, you know, much like your parents, trying to get a better life, trying to do better for their kids, this and the third. And I still have memories of like going out in California, collecting cans with my mom so that she can get the money for the recycling. You know,
I used to walk to Kmart with my mom for 5 miles because we didn't have a car. We walked 5 miles. Yeah,
been there. Like,
and I was like super soft. I would like cry and my mom would have to carry me while my 2-year-old sister was just like trucking it. Big shout out, Liz Novello. Go ahead.
But yeah, so I've always kind of been like an outspoken person. I mean, clearly I'm not shy. So it's
great energy.
Thanks.
An epic lipstick, by the way. You brought the lipstick game for real.
You know, I had to do it with, I mean, I'm not an artist for nothing. Like I'm not going to come out here with no bland looking face. Shout out to Wet n Wild.
Is Wet n Wild the name of the water park that I loved as a kid? Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So yeah, I have always been about taking chances, betting on myself and just fucking going for it. Of course, as a kid and as you get older, life kind of beats at you. Experiences kind of come at you because we're all born without ability. Like I can fucking do anything. Like when we're babies, we're like, I'm the cutest fucking thing in this room. Somebody coddle me like now. So
I buy that. Keep going.
Yeah. So when I was in third grade, I was one of the teachers. We had an assembly, like every elementary, they have the little assembly things. Like it was a show. It was our grade's turn. And one of the teachers was like, oh my God, I need somebody. Like I need a volunteer to do a cheer. And I was like, I'll go. Not realizing what I signed myself up for. It ended up being me on stage, little third grade Mahogany holding a microphone. I'm talking, and then the freaking microphone dies and it's not even on. The whole cafeteria laughing at me. And I'm like, I'm already up here, so don't fucking do this damn thing. I go again, and I'm like, when I say citizen, you say shit, citizenship. The whole, like, Gary, when I tell you how, like, in love I felt with that moment of being on stage, to have that response and that influence in a positive way, like, mind-blowing. So I'm very, like, it's always been a thing of mine to be a motivational speaker just because of all the things I've went through. Later on, fast forward to, like, high school, I got into art. Heavy. Not that art, but actually airbrushing. My mom, thankfully, she was more concerned with my work ethic, my character, my dad as well. My dad preached interpersonal skills. He said, if you are not gonna get good grades, look, that's one thing. You have to be a good person. You have to be so that when you go out into life, you are a good mother, you are a good employee, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so I have so much love and respect for my parents. Like, literally, they've just influenced me so much, and I'm so grateful for them. I did the airbrushing thing. I ended up getting paid to do other people's projects in school. So I still have, like, the little invoices that I made myself. Always had that hustler mentality. Just, I was like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I'm more concerned with making money anyways, and my parents were cool with it. So, you know, when you talk about, taste during your 20s, you're looking, Gary, at the epitome.
At the taster. At the taster.
Yes, literally. Okay, so I'm gonna go rapid fire here because this is gonna be a lot. Left high school, tried to do art school. That failed. Community school, that failed. Marine Corps, that failed. Went back and did massage school with the money I got from the Marine Corps for doing just boot camp. I know about the yellow footprints, so hey, holler at me. after that, I bounced around from job to job, became a special needs teacher, legal assistant. You said what now?
I was saying you were searching. You were tasting.
You were searching. Yeah, my mom kind of got on me about that. She's like, you know, like, you could, like, you need
she to get that impatient. She got impatient.
Yeah, she's like, you gotta pick something and stick to it. Get a job with benefits. I'm like, oh, I don't want to. So I just, you know, I kept trying things. I got married, like I said. That was not the healthiest relationship. And still to this day, I still have contact with him, or he tries to reach out to me. It was an abusive relationship. So I will say, ladies, guys, whoever, wherever you are, if you're in a situation where this person is keeping money from you, physically hurting you, abusing you mentally, physically, whatever, make a plan. And please, I beg you from the depths of my soul, get out. It is not worth it, especially when you have kids.
100%.
It's not worth it. No. And I think from that marriage, I do have a beautiful little 3-year-old. And he's tried to reach out to see her, but I'm like, you weren't there for the divorce, but now you want to be there out of nowhere, bruh, bye. So that's been a kind of come and go type of situation. I just block it and keep it moving. Haters are gonna hate. I mean, Jesus had haters. Hello.
You're just going off, Mahogany.
I mean, I knew you'd like me. Like,
I love you. What can I help you? Like when you really think about it, where do you want to put the energy?
So, okay. And that's where I'm at now. I left my corporate job not too long ago, about 2 weeks ago. Literally the week I landed this, I had prayed about it for a while anyways, because of COVID, my youngest brother being special needs, he was going to need somebody to be with him to teach him. My mom, isn't able to, just cause she works nights. So during the day she's trying to sleep. So I was like, okay, so I can kind of do that. But then I had to quit my job. So I'm doing art now, and that's kind of what I've been pushing. I'm trying to kind of see how long that can hold me over. I do have my website somewhere. It's just mahoganystudios.com. My Instagram, you can check it out. It's all over the place.
We got you all. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all over the place, but I definitely have other interests as well. Like I said, I would love to be in the future like a motivational speaker, and I understand that I can't divvy out my energy into six different things. It's just not going to work. Why? Like I'd rather, because it's too many.
Why? And more importantly, Mahogany, what are you aiming for? Because I would tell you that you could divvy it to six things. You may not find the financial impact, right. But you might end up being wildly happier. I mean, you're clearly an intriguing individual. No, seriously, in a good way. Like you've got crazy energy and like, you know, when I hear that, I say, you could do six things. It might look like the following. You may have one thing that really is the maximizing, like when I look at you, I'm like, oh, this is that girl. I need to help her see that if she can get one thing that she likes, that is like the meat.
Yeah.
Right? That's her job. But it's not her obsession. She likes it, but it's nice and it's a nice stabilizer. She's got a 3-year-old. It's a nice stabilizer. She's probably feeling her own level of impatience and anxiety of like, I need something like that. And then
No. See that I will say you're good. I am patient as fuck. Good. I'm not. Good. I'm only
then your comment of I can't do six things makes no fucking sense to me. Then
hear me out.
With Gary B. You're more than welcome to do mornings with Mahogany, but this ain't it. So
okay, I'm listening.
Because I'm coming with real love here for you.
No, yeah, I really want to hear you out though, seriously.
You can do six then. If you're actually truly patient and you're actually happy, well then you can do 63, like for real. Because you've decided you can't on six, but I don't see it because you don't have the other variables that make people struggle with that. I think you can, why not? Because your mom said so? Because you are tired? Like what?
I feel like because I want to basically, because kind of like back to what you were saying about it being like the meat, I feel like I want to give and pour in so much 100% into everything and I'm not going to be able to. Like for example, for like the motivational speaking, I put up videos on my Instagram for the art. Like I have my website. I King actually did my website, by the way. So that was awesome. And for September, I'm actually starting real estate school. So that's something that I'm going into doing with my brother, David. Awesome. So
shout out to David.
Yes. to do real estate. I mean, Spanish speaker in Atlanta, like this Hispanic population is so underserved down here.
Can I ask you what you're solving for? Do you think about your world right now, like first I need to get a financial stabilizer? Like, is that at the top of the list?
It's up there, but it's not like the biggest.
So like, what's the biggest?
The biggest, I mean, and see, that's the thing. Like the biggest is like a long-term goal that I know is not
going to be.
Which is? To retire my parents.
That's awesome.
And that's why I'm saying, like, I know that's going to take a while. And even.
Yeah. Okay, so keep going with me. Got it. That's more philosophical, which needs practicality. Cool. So what's next? What's the next biggest?
The next biggest, just like getting my own place. Cause like right now I live with my family.
So far, both of those sound very stabilized in money. Yeah. Right? So like when I go, is the first thing financial stabilization? Both your first two are byproducts of what I was trying to make number one.
And
that's why
I'm saying like money is like, that's why the money is like such a like long-term, like it's gonna come. I know it's gonna come.
It's gonna come if you execute. There's a lot of people that get to 89 with the money never came because they never went operational.
Yeah.
Now you may be happy forever, which is fucking huge. I'd much rather you be 92 and happy forever than get to 63, get your parents into retirement, but not be happy.
No, yeah. And that's like, especially now that I'm getting older, like I always told myself like, oh yeah, like I don't want to look back and have like my daughter be the reason I didn't pursue my goals, or she slowed me down with the second and third. And
she's definitely not. Like, good news. You're too thoughtful. The fact that you even put that out in words means that you have the energy to not allow that to be an excuse, because here's the problem. There's just unlimited single moms that went on to destroy it. So there's, you know, that is definitely like, that's not an excuse that you're allowing yourself. That's why you just shared it with all of us. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of you for that, because it's an excuse. Everything's an excuse.
Yeah, if you let it, for sure.
Yeah, like, this is more about you. What I'm trying to figure out is as the ultimate taster, do you have the stomach to grit shit you don't like for enough of a period of time to get to the place that you need to get to? Let me give you an example, Mahogany. Uh-huh. I have big goals, right? Big dreams, big aspirations on impact and success. VaynerMedia itself is me grinning it, because I didn't need to build a business where I had clients yelling at me and all the bullshit I deal with, and you don't make a lot of money, but I knew I needed to build the foundation. And so in the prime of my career, where I had a ton of options to have it more fun, I decided to eat shit. I'm eating shit right now with all the leverage. I'm curious how much shit you're willing to eat.
And that's where I feel like there's been a perspective switch, like I said, since I left my corporate job, which I am still very grateful for it. But just if it's me doing like the 5-6 different things that I'm choosing to do, and I'm eating shit doing those 5-6 different things, yes. Yeah, long run, I will do it for sure. Because well, I mean, right. Yeah, but I mean, and even like further down the line kind of goal I have is to become a chiropractor, because, you know.
Listen, you could be a motivational speaking chiropractor. Like, you can do whatever you want. Your biggest vulnerability at this point, from a very short jam session that we're having, is you need meat. You need to have a singular thing that gives you a foundational beginning point. I think the reason you can do 6 things is, to your point, if you get a 9-to-5 as a receptionist in a chiropractor's office, because one day you want to be that and you'll learn through osmosis and you'll make relationships, but that starts to give you the financial foundation to actually move out, because you said that was your goal. You can live with your parents your whole life. I think it's fucking fresh. I'm starting to think that I want to do that. Like, it's so fun. But you need to realize that you need a foundational piece, and then you need to let all your other chaos happen. I have a foundational piece. Mahogany, I don't even want to tell people how much time I'm spending on sports cards right now. I'm on fucking eBay 24 hours a day. Like, I'm in it, but it's the meat that is allowing me to be, oh shit, I'm hot on sports cards for 6 years because this is the moment. Oh shit, I'm going to go, you know, start a sneaker deal with K-Swiss. Empathy Wines, Vayner Sports, still
building. Congrats on that, by the way. MMA. Like,
you know, all that comes with having the foundation. You need a foundation, and without it, you're gonna struggle. I'm telling you, you're gonna struggle.
Uh-huh.
You need a singular thing. I would make that thing very strategic to all your other ambitions. Right. Why can't you be the art director for one of the 50 biggest motivational speakers in the world? You clearly have artistic talent, right? Why can't you be the creative on, you know, you're in Atlanta. Why don't you reach out to Sarah Blakely, who's a fucking G. She's the founder of Spanx. Her husband, Jesse Itzler, is a Vayner speaker. He's a G, created Go New York, Go New York, Go, that song for the Knicks back in 94, and many other businesses and books and all that. Why can't you reach out to her and say, I want to do creative for you? Because now you're in the osmosis, in the cocoon of a motivational speaker and a business speaker and a G female who lives in Atlanta. Like, that's how you have to think. That's a good $45,000-$60,000 a year job for you, because it gets you to move out and you start saving a little bit and you're making relationships and you're a young woman and you can do all those things over the next 40 years.
I love it.
I love it too.
Yeah, I'm so down.
Listen to me, you will lose. I'm telling you with all the love of my heart, you will lose unless you right now use this moment that you manifested through action.
You
didn't fucking, you know how many people are like, how do I get on TV? I read the comments as we speak. And I'm like, how do I get on TV with Gary? Go on fucking Twitter, ask me. Like follow, text me on 212-931-5731 and ask me. People are like, how? Well, how do I do that? It's called Google, motherfucker. Google it, figure it out. You figured out how to get on this show. You need to figure out how to get you a real stable job that pays you enough to do the things you want, that you like enough, but is strategic for what you want to do in life. What you did to get on this show was action, not pontificating. I want to retire my parents. I want to chiropract. I want to, like, you need action, but I think the practical execution is action that is strategic to your wants. I love those wants. I'm not, when I just did that whole thing, I'm not dissing your wants. I'm fired up about your wants. I just want you to get something practical as fuck.
Right.
That is foundational to get to those places. Work 9 to 6 for Sarah Blakely or some other, you know, person that you want to be like in fucking Atlanta, which is unlimited fucking G's in Atlanta. And then at, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 PM, do side things, art, you know, that's watch chiropractor videos. Yeah. But you don't have the stake.
I don't.
And you might be too cozy with the infrastructure you have. It might be nice to have mom help out with the little one. I get it. I have empathy. I'm not fucking judging. I get shit. But you need to figure shit out for you.
For sure. I completely agree.
You said to me, I want to fucking retire my parents. I want to move out. You need fucking money.
Yes, very true.
I want you to get a job that pays you money, but is also strategic to all the wonderful energy that you have. You get it?
Yes.
That's it. Not maybe I'll love teaching special need kids. Maybe I'll love being, you know, maybe. Yeah. Not maybe.
I feel like I've tried enough things to know what really resonates with me.
Well, I mean, you need to go work for a motivational speaker or a chiropractor, period, end of story. I'm ending it with that. I gotta go. I love you. See you, bye.
Can I get a follow, please?
Yes,
please.
You can. Mahogany Studios, got it. All right, Justin, get us out of here. Bye, Mahogany.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Lebanon, big love for all of you. All of our hearts and prayers are with everybody from the incredible city of Beirut. I really genuinely enjoyed all of you in the comments today. Please hit me up on Twitter right now. Gary VEE on Twitter right now and tell me what's good.